Live and local, you're tuned in to a Juno Afternoon. It's Wednesday, June 7th, 2017. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. On today's show, we'll talk about NED, a band that rocks out for women with cancer. Dana Herndon will be here to highlight STEM summer camps. We'll get updates from the Zach Gordon Youth Center, and Keith McPinkow will talk to us about the Five Finger Islands Light. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more right here on a Juno Afternoon. Weather for the rest of today, cloudy, highs around 70, and tonight, cloudy, lows around 50.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A new federal report shows the poor conditions of many tribal roads throughout the United States. Arizona Public Radio's Ryan Heinches reports it contributes to higher rates of students missing school.
The Government Accountability Office visited school districts on three reservations, including the Navajo Nation. The 27,000-square-mile tribal nation is the largest in the U.S., with more than 4,000 miles of dirt school bus routes. They often become impassable with heavy rain and snowfall. The GAO's report concludes those poor road conditions contribute to a nearly 10% higher rate of students being chronically absent from school. Rebecca Shea led the study, which was the first time the agency examined the relationship between bad roads and absenteeism on tribal lands.
One of the things that we heard from all of the stakeholders is that constrained funding has limited their ability to improve and maintain roads, and this has contributed to their deterioration. Our report, noting this as a challenge, brings some high-level attention to the issue.
Shea says the number of tribal roads has grown in recent years, but federal maintenance funding has remained flat. President Trump's budget proposal, however, includes a more than $12 million increase in tribal infrastructure spending through the Department of the Interior. The GAO report also says overlapping jurisdictions between tribes and federal and state governments create funding shortages. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heinches in Flagstaff.
At-risk youth from the Rosebud Sioux Reservation took part in a supervised buffalo harvest recently. As Jim Kent reports, the purpose of the event was to reacquaint young Lakota males with cultural traditions to help build self-esteem and heal from trauma.
The Sichangu MVP program is a support network for young males aged 10 to 18 who've been victims of violence or who have witnessed violence. Janet Routson is executive director of White Buffalo Calf Women's Society, which sponsors the group.
Sichangu MVP, our most valuable players, it is to address trauma for young males. So trauma from violence, whether that's interpersonal violence because they've been witnesses to domestic violence in their home, whether they've been assaulted because of gang activity, whether they're being bullied in school, whether they've been sexually assaulted, which boys never talk about, never report.
Since the buffalo hunt was a traditional rite of passage to manhood, bringing these boys, teens, and young men to this place to bear witness to the day's activities is considered an important step in helping them identify their role in their community and in helping them heal. 16-year-old Jeremy felt honored to actually ride along with tribal game, fish, and parks personnel for the hunt, while 10-year-old Michael said he was sad when he saw the young bull that was killed.
Because he had to leave his family.
A $1 million grant from the Department of Justice's Office of Victims of Crime helped create the Sichangu MVP program. Janet Routson hopes it helps young males who've experienced violence to become good fathers, good relatives, and good community members. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
The Hamilton County Parks Department in Indiana has agreed to return all artifacts removed from a grave near a county park to the Miami Tribe of Oklahoma. The Indy Star reports the agreement comes after years of negotiations. The artifacts include human remains, pottery, and arrowheads. Thousands of items were reportedly removed by university researchers between 2001 and 2011 and handed over to the Parks Department for study. The U Indian Museum is scheduled to reopen this weekend after years of collaboration between Colorado's three Ute tribes and the History Colorado Museum. The museum celebrates and honors U Indians from their perspective and includes exhibits, artifacts, and art. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation. with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by Ramona Farms, offering wholesome and delicious foods from our heirloom crops as our contribution to a better diet for the benefit of all people. We are honored to share our centuries-old farming and culinary traditions online at ramonafarms.com.
The third National Gathering of American Indian Veterans takes place July 21st through the 23rd in Wheaton, Illinois, with World War II code talkers and native bands and dancers. Information at trickstergallery.com. Proud to support this program.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Support comes from the Alaska Robotics Gallery, offering art that features narwhals, squid, and flying whales, located at 220 Front Street in downtown Juneau. More information at alaskarobotics.com.
You're tuned into a Juneau Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and here with me are my first guests. I've got a representative from Cancer Connection and two representatives from Let Every Woman Know Alaska, and one of those also doubles as the lead singer of the band NED, No Evidence of Disease, and they're all here to talk to us about an event going on tomorrow night. So would you all just like to say hello briefly and introduce yourselves?
Great. I'm Tish Griffin-Satry. I'm with Cancer Connection, and we're honored to have two events going, National Cancer Survivors Day and Let Every Woman Know with the NED concert. So
fantastic. And in the middle here.
Good afternoon. I'm Cheryl Weinberg. I'm one of the board members for Let Every Woman Know Alaska, and we're delighted to participate in the whole night.
And Joni.
Hi, my name is Dr. Joni Mayer Hope. I'm a gynecologic oncologist, and I practice in Anchorage, Alaska, and I care for women throughout the state. And I'm here representing Let Every Woman Know, this nonprofit, and also to perform with my band, No Evidence of Disease. And we're made up of five gynecologic oncologists, and we're here to do a awareness and fundraising concert.
Welcome, all three of you, to the show, and thank you so much for being here. Tish, we're going to go back to you, so you can start off by telling us about the first event of tomorrow evening. So Right. Go ahead and tell us all about it.
Oh, thanks. It's an annual event called National Cancer Survivors Day, and it's our celebration of life. There's 1.4 million survivors nationwide that celebrate usually in the first week of June. It's a survivors event and a time to say, yee-haw, we're all still here. We're honoring four folks, Bartlett Hospital Mammography Unit as our medical professionals of the year. We have corporate partner with Valley Medical. Becky Thomas is our volunteer of the year, and the one I can't wait to hear about is Terry is our survivor of the year. Terry White is just an amazing survivor. He's worked a lot with Cancer Connection in our support group, but he also climbed Mount Kilimanjaro and helped raise with 28 other survivors $250,000 for his particular area of cancer, which is myeloma. So,
Wow. Yeah,
it's a pretty exciting night. We're going to have a silent auction. We're going to have a chance to hear from each of these award-winning winners, and the band's going to give a little preview, and then we'll take a little break. And our event is no cost.
Okay.
It's from 5 to 7, but we sure would like a heads up if you're coming, because we're doing a light supper, and so we're just trying to get a head count. And so if they can call 796-2273, we have a few seats left.
Fantastic. Well, that sounds great. Is this an annual event?
This is an annual event, and Cancer Connection is a grassroots organization predominantly made up of survivors. It's our 20th year, and we're here to help from diagnosis all the way through whatever support folks need as they manage their disease. And one of the things we have found is that it's a great opportunity to partner with other organizations doing the same thing we are, and what a great opportunity for us to really make it a party, do our award thing, and then have a great concert following.
I can't think of a better reason. And Cheryl, would you tell us a little bit about Let Every Woman Know Alaska?
I'd be delighted to. So Let Every Woman Know Alaska is a nonprofit. It was started in 2012, and it's dedicated to providing support and programming for women who experience cancer, their families, and loved ones. And it's also dedicated to providing awareness so that if so people, women know the signs and symptoms of gynecologic cancer, can get checked out early if they're experiencing any of them, and also we're involved with a campaign to end cervical cancer.
I see. And then, Joni, you are the president of Let Every Woman Know Alaska, is that correct?
Yeah, our board is a combination of survivors of gynecologic cancers, people who are supporters and caregivers, and then providers. So we're a small board, but we try to have a long reach in terms of the kinds of programs that we provide statewide for awareness about gynecologic cancers.
Is there anything you'd like to say while you're on the show about awareness or gynecologic cancers, or anything that you think, maybe a couple things the public could be more aware of?
Well, I think the first thing is having the conversation and not being afraid to have the conversation about our bodies as women. And even knowing that there are gynecologic cancers, that they really exist, that you can get cancers of any of the below-the-belt parts, ovaries, fallopian tubes, uterus, the lining or the wall of your uterus, cervix, vagina, vulva, all of these areas can develop cancers, and they all have different signs and symptoms. So when you notice something that's out of baseline for you as a woman, it's really important to both know your body so you recognize that and to seek help and not be satisfied if you don't get the answers that you need.
I really like that advice. So, Joni, you're not just a doctor. You're also one of the lead singers of the band No Evidence of Disease. What made, and everybody in the band is also, tell me more about the band. I know you mentioned it before, but let's talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
More.
So No Evidence of Disease is a rock and roll band, and we're all gynecologic oncologists. So there's five members of our band, and we are nationwide. Our drummer's in New York City. We have a lead rhythm guitar player and another vocalist who's from North Carolina. Our lead guitar player is from Portland, Oregon. Our bass player is from Philadelphia. And then I'm in Alaska. And we've been together since 2008. And we write original rock and roll music the music is intended to be good rock and roll music about all the themes that one might want to sing about. You know, the theme of the songs are not focused necessarily about cancer, although certainly our life experiences touch the music that we write. But we play at venues and for events that raise awareness about gynecologic cancers. Our intention is to bring people to listen to the music and then find more out about the band. And since the time that we've started, we have three albums, and there's also been a documentary film that's been made about the band called No Evidence of Disease that tells the story of gynecologic cancer through the window of music and the power of healing that music can provide. And it tells the story of the doctors in the band, but also of our patients. And it's a really a unique way to get the word out. So a lot of times people say, well, what can No Evidence of Disease really do? What do you do for gynecologic cancer? And here in Alaska in 2012 was the first time No Evidence of Disease, the band, came to play. And we did that because a patient of mine and a sister of a patient of mine said, you know, hey, we'd love to bring your band up here, because they tend to Google you when you're a doctor and they realize, wow, she's in a rock band. And I said, okay, let's bring the band up here, but let's not just bring the band up here. Let's do a whole event associated with it. And so we mobilized the entire community. This was in Anchorage, and we raised over $100,000 for the event. We had a conference, and we birthed a nonprofit, Let Every Woman Know, at that time. And so now we have, you know, since 2012, this nonprofit that does programming and is totally independent of the band, but does statewide programming. So it's like the band was sort of the match that lit the fire that's raised a massive movement here in Alaska. To raise awareness about gynecologic cancers. So that's an example sort of how we function. This is the second time the entire band has been back, and this time we're doing a little Alaska tour, and we're starting the tour here in Juneau. We're very, very excited to be here. We're going to go and play two performances in Anchorage, and then we're going to play one in Homer.
That's wonderful, and we're going to listen to one of your new songs in just a minute. I just had one more question about the history of the band. I can kind of guess what may have brought you together in the first place, but is there a particular story or something in particular that made you guys decide to take up this cause?
Well, we started, honestly, as a bit of a joke at our national conference where the person who was in charge of the entertainment for the conference thought it would be hilarious to have a rock and roll concert of membership. So at that time, he basically handpicked his friends who he knew were good musicians, and then he sent out an email saying, is there anyone else who'd like to do this? And there's gynecologic oncology is a small field. There's under 2,000 nationally, mm-hmm. and all of us go to this annual conference. So an email went out, and I think the two people responded to that, and they're both in the band currently. So, and we got together, and we did we never really met each other, but we learned 20 cover tunes, and we did a show in front of 2,000 people that at the conference. It was in Tampa, Florida. And at that time, I was living in New York City, and after the concert, I just started thinking, you know, wow, these guys are really good musicians, and wow, what a powerful thing music is. And all of us are musicians, had been musicians from the time we were very young, and maybe even dreamed of being professional musicians at some point in our lives, but ultimately, you know, those dreams receded and we became doctors, you know. So our drummer was also in New York City, and we struck up a friendship, and we thought, hey, what if we were to actually combine these things? What if we're actually to start doing some original music and, you know, getting the word out that way? And so that was how we started. And we floated the idea to the other guys in the band, and they thought, no way, that's crazy. And so we went to a small record label, Motima Records, and we Nemish, the drummer, and I, and we presented the idea. We said, we have a band. You know, we're gynecologic oncologists. We want to write. We have original music. You know, we kind of oversold it a little bit. And would you like to do an album? And they're like, wow, we like that idea. And so at that point, the rest of the band, we weren't really a band yet, but the rest of the guys said, yeah, wow, what an opportunity. So we came together around making our first album. It's a 6-song EP, and it just. It sparked from there.
That's a really cool backstory. And I just love the concept of the band, too. I've just been so excited to meet you guys and talk about it ever since I learned that you were going to be on the show today. So.
Well, thank you so much for having us.
Oh, of course, of course. And the concert is tomorrow. Yeah, the event and the event is tomorrow. The Cancer Connection Survivor Day event takes place from 5 to 7, and the concert follows, and it's at the Jack. Is there anywhere we can find more information?
You can give us a call at 796-2273. Be glad to field any questions.
Got it.
And also the Events Alaska website.
Events Alaska website. Thank you very much. Anything else you guys would like to add?
Nope. Hope to all see you there for the party.
So the concert's at 7:30.
Correct.
At the Jack.
Let's listen to Bring You Back from No Evidence of Disease.
In 1916, no one knew the booming town of Treadwell, home to the largest gold mine in the world, was on the brink of its ultimate destruction. In one momentous year, infrastructure crumbles, fires rage, and war looms. Young engineer George Barnett arrives in the territory of Alaska with guts and genius, not expecting to fall in love or carry the safety of the miners and the town on his shoulders. See the earth-shattering new play, Treadwell Gold, at Perseverance Theater, June 22nd through July 3rd. Tickets at the Jack, Hearthside Books, ptalaska.org, and 463-TIXS.
The time has come for the KXLL Pop-Up Record Shop, returning Friday, June 9th at the Jack Rock Around the Block Party. Browse our stacks and pick up vintage vinyl starting at 5:30 p.m. Donate your collection of used records, Monday through Friday between 10 and 4 at KTOO. More information at kxll.org.
It is 23 minutes after the hour. You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and my next guest is Rebecca Sosa, filling in for Dana. And you're here to talk about STEM summer camp. So welcome, Rebecca.
Thanks for having us.
Me, of course. Okay, first of all, would you please remind us what STEM, S-T-E-M, stands for?
Yeah, it's science, technology, engineering, and math. And it's one of those acronyms. It's greater than the sum of its parts. STEM is really more than just those four subjects. It's about an integrated way of learning where you're really focused on critical thinking and sort of cross-subject problem solving.
And you're here to tell us about the STEM summer camps here in Juneau. So what do you got?
Sure. So we've got a great lineup. We have 9 camps over 7 weeks this summer, and they are like the name says, all science, technology, engineering, and math mm-hmm. based. We have 2 new really exciting options that are very intentionally STEAM, so science, technology, engineering, arts, and math. Those
That's the
two
first I heard of STEAM. That sounds
oh, yeah.
really exciting.
It won't be the last. And those two camps, shockingly, they're 2 of the ones we have a lot of space left in. I think just because they're new, people aren't sure what they're going to be like. One of them starts next week. And it's for our youngest campers. It's for students entering grades 2 and 3. And it's called Full Steam Ahead. So it's all about water and boats and fishing. And it's 5 days working with Marnita Conrad, who's an elementary school teacher out at Riverbend, but doing a mix of art kits and science experiments all based around, you know, where we live.
So that it sounds like part of it takes place outdoors, maybe.
They'll be doing some work out. You know, the camp is at Thunder Mountain High School. So they're in the classroom with some experiments, some will be outside, and then they're going to do some exploring out by the river there.
Great. And would you like to tell us a little bit more about some of the other
sure.
options?
So the other one that I was talking about is called Kinetic Sculpture. This is actually the camp that I'm most excited about. We got the curriculum from one of my old coworkers, Bob Veith. I bet there's some folks listening that remember Bob and his Saturday Thing days. But he's now at MIT and working to develop summer camp curriculum and offered for us to use this summer camp curriculum. It's 1 week where kids are building moving pieces of art, so kinetic sculpture, and learning all the mechanics that go behind that. So they're learning about center of balance. They're going to be learning how to use camshafts and gear ratios and just make these very, very cool works of art throughout the week.
You guys do STEM camp for big kids?
we take instructors in training.
I guess that's just called college.
You don't have to stop there.
That's
There's
true.
Plenty.
I like the idea of doing like a short course like that over the summer.
Well, and I'll interrupt myself to say, you know, we promote all kinds of STEM around town and the makerspace. If you're an adult and you hear about these camps and you want to go tinker that way, the makerspace is made for you. They have open studios on Monday nights and you can go in. They've got a laser cutter, a 3D printer. I think they just got a lathe, full shop equipment. They can walk you through safety for everything and you can make whatever you want. And there's enough people there that if you want to learn about how to use cams and how to set gears up in your works of art, they'll help you do it. It's just a great community resource.
The makerspace.
The makerspace.
That sounds cool. But back to STEM.
Yes.
What are some of the benefits of getting kids into STEM?
So, you know, it's part of the Juneau Economic Development Council, which we sponsor all the camps. It's part of our talent development initiative. And the idea is that these are just essential skills. They're the 21st century work skills, being able to solve your own problems. It's not pigeonholing anyone into any one job. It is recognizing that the STEM science, technology, engineering, and math workforce is growing faster than any other workforce out there right now. There are twice as many openings if you have a specialized degree in one of those fields in STEM jobs as there are in any other kind of job. I challenge anyone to go look at just the state hiring website, and just from glancing at that every day, you can see those are the subjects that you really want your kids pursuing to be very, very employable in the future. But beyond that, we want to set up every kid in Juneau, every kid that we can get involved in these programs to be successful at whatever they do. You know, you work here at K2, if you've got a strong ability to think critically, to solve your own problems, and to use technology doing that, you're going to be much more successful.
I hope I have those things. All right. So you mentioned they take place, these camps take place at Thunder Mountain.
Yep.
And remind me of the dates again.
Sure. So there's 7 weeks. We started. We've got one going this week, June 5th to 9th, and then we're straight through every week until August 4th. We've got a break around July 4th there just to give our instructors a little bit of time off. We have some kind of robotics camp each one of those weeks. Then those two arts camps that I talked about, and a special, our first year offering a high school robotics camp that last week of summer, so July 31st, August 4th. And then the other robotics camps, they've been around for years, really popular. Those are very, very close to being full. So if you haven't signed up yet and you know it's on your list of things to do, I would go right now and sign up online, jedc.org/summer camps, or summer programs, sorry, summer programs, and it will take you to our online registration. For any reason you can't find it or you forget, you can just give me a call, 523-2334. I can get you registered over the phone and make sure we save one of those last spots for you.
All right. You heard the woman. Go sign up right now. Did you ever do anything like this when you were a kid?
No, which is such a bummer. And I had, you know, my parents were in STEM fields, and I was encouraged to pursue them, but I just, you know, the robotic stuff wasn't even out there when I was a kid.
Right.
So I'm jealous of the kids that get to do it now.
Me too. So what are the kids who are participating, what do they need to bring? How should they prepare for camp?
So nothing. It's you come, we'll have all the supplies there ready. We do ask, they bring a sack lunch. We provide a little snack to keep them going in the morning. And then we'll have, I think that's one of the barriers of trying out computer programming and trying out robotics, is that the supplies are pretty expensive. So we've been doing it long enough. We've got enough that we can set up all our campers and make sure they get really good hands-on practice for that week.
Cool. All right, Rebecca, well, is there anything I missed or anything you'd like to mention?
I don't think so. Again, just especially for those robotics camps, register today. Some of them are already sold out and spaces are going quickly. And then if you have any questions about the others, that kinetic sculpture camp, I just think is going to be the coolest thing ever. So
that sounds awesome.
Yeah. I hope we can fill it up and keep it going for another couple of years.
I hope so, too. Good luck. And thank you very much for being on the show today.
Thank you.
Is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 7th of June, 2017. It's the birthday of the novelist Orhan Pamuk, born in Istanbul, 1952. Has lived his entire life in Istanbul, apart from 3 years in New York City. In 2005, he gave an interview in which he referred to the Armenian genocide and the mass killing of tens of thousands of Kurds, for which criminal charges were filed against him. There was an international outcry. Many noted authors spoke out in his defense. The charges were dropped the following year. It's the birthday of Louise Erdrich, born in Little Falls, Minnesota, 1954. Grew up in Wahpeton, North Dakota. Mother was French Ojibwe. Her father was German-American. She was the oldest of seven children. She went off to Dartmouth College. She was part of the first class to admit women there. Louise Erdrich said, "I was in college, and I had failed at everything else. I kept journals and diaries when I was a kid, and I started writing when I was 19 or 20. After college, I decided that that's absolutely what I wanted to do. Part of it was that I did not prepare myself for anything else in life." She went back to North Dakota. She worked as a resident poet in the schools, driving all over the state in her old pickup truck. And she started writing a book. She was living in Fargo, a tiny apartment above a flower shop. She said it was heaven to have my own quiet, beautiful office with a great window, a view that carried to the outskirts of Fargo. She published her first short story, Saint Marie, got a letter from Philip Roth, who said he liked it. She was inspired to keep writing, and she wrote the book, Love Medicine, came out in 1984. Other novels included The Beat Queen, The Master Butcher's Singing Club, The Plague of Doves, The Roundhouse. And it's the birthday of the novelist Elizabeth Bowen, born Dublin, 1899. An only child, her father was mentally ill, her mother died when she was 13. After that, the girl was raised by various relatives. Elizabeth Bowen said, "The original wish to write is the wish to make oneself felt." Her books included The Death of the Heart, The Heat of the Day, and Eva Trout. Here's a poem for today by Ted Kooser, entitled Father, May 19, 1999. Today you would be 97 if you had lived, and we would all be miserable, you and your children driving from clinic to clinic, an ancient, fearful hypochondriac and his fretful son and daughter, asking directions, trying to read the complicated, fading map of cures. But with your dignity intact, you have been gone for 20 years. And I'm glad for all of us, although I miss you every day. The heartbeat under your necktie, the hand cupped on the back of my neck, Old Spice in the air, your voice delighted with stories. On this day, each year, you loved to relate that at the moment of your birth, your mother glanced out the window and saw lilacs in bloom. Well, today, lilacs are blooming in side yards all over Iowa, still welcoming you. A poem entitled Father by Ted Kooser from his collection Delights and Shadows, published by Copper Canyon Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Progressive Insurance, committed to offering a streamlined shopping experience where home and auto can be bundled together. Now that's Progressive. Learn more at progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. And by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, now available on iOS devices, subscriptions available at poetrymagazine.org. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
If you're just joining us, you're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and with me is my next guest, Jordan Nigro, representing the Zach Gordon Youth Center. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Shelley.
How was the walk over from next door?
Hot. It's warm out there. It's wild.
A high of 70-something.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Okay. Let's start things off with just remind us, what's your connection with the Zach Gordon Youth Center?
So I'm the manager. My actual title is Youth Services and Development Manager for Parks and Rec. And so we, you know, we're getting into summer here, so we have lots of stuff going on.
Yeah, I saw a fun post on the Zach Gordon Facebook page today. Were you involved in yesterday's Mendenhall River Trail hike?
I was not, but yes, they had a great time, and they're all enjoying the warm weather, too. This is our hiking camp week, so they did Perseverance on Monday, and they went out to Mendenhall River what is that trail called?
Mendenhall River Trail hike.
Yeah, anyway. And then I'm not sure which the trail they're hiking today. I can't remember when they left what they said, but they have
a,
you know, they have a great time and everybody comes back super happy. And yeah.
Hiking will do that to you.
It's nice when it's not raining for the hiking.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's a very good point. Yeah. So what summary activities are coming up next?
So next week we have our Bugs and Birds camp. So that camp is also going to be doing a lot of outside stuff, exploring the local bugs and birds. they have some, you know, art and science. It's kind of a STEM-related camp, so they're going to have a lot of fun. And we actually do still have some spaces in that camp, so if you're listening and you don't have a plan for next week for your 8 to 12-year-old, our camps run from 1 in the afternoon to 4:30 in the afternoon, and they're $95. So there's still spots. If you are interested, come into Zach Gordon Youth Center. We're right across the parking lot from Centennial Hall.
So should come in person? Is that the best way to do it?
Yeah, that's the best way to do it. Yep, because we'll have, you know, the consents to sign and all that stuff. But they're quite affordable and super fun. And
yeah. And we were just talking with Rebecca Sosa before this about the STEM summer camps, and I asked her this question too. Did you go to summer camp when you were a kid?
You know, I did go to Sitka Fine Arts Camp when I was a kid. I grew up in Gustavus, so that was the only camp that I went to. And I loved it, and I still have wildly fond memories of
that.
I went all through middle school and high school. So, yeah, super fun.
I'm glad you had a positive experience.
Yeah. Camps are good. They're a great way to get to know different kids and get out into the environment around here. That's one of the things we really do a lot of, is just being outside with our camps and playing and, you know, it's summertime, so.
Summertime. And the weather is great.
It is.
Today. So this is your monthly appearance on Juno Afternoon.
Yeah.
So do you have anything else you'd like to update us on?
Well, so the other thing I did want to mention is that our Youth Employment and Parks program has started up again. So that started on Monday, and that's this great partnership between Zach Gordon Youth Center, Southeast Alaska Independent Living, and the State of Alaska Department of Labor. And so what happens is we have a group this year. We have 10 youth, ages 16 to 20, who are working in our city parks throughout the summer. So they come to Zach Gordon in the mornings. This year we've expanded, so they're working mostly a full day. They work about 7 hours a day. And last year I think they did 4, so we've been able to secure some additional funding for that. Sale worked on that, and we were able to expand the hours. And so it's just this great partnership, and they gain skills, and they gain resume, you know, information, and they can have it's a great summer. They get paid, and it's been really fun to see it succeed, and it was great to see the group growing this year. So, yeah. So we have that going on. And then the other thing I just wanted to remind folks is that, you know, the center is available, and it's free. And if you have, you know, kids that need something to do in the summer, we open at 11 a.m., and kids can come down, hang out. You know, I just ran over here, just washed my hands before I came over here, because I was planting the garden with a young man, and it was very fun. And so, you know, we always have things going on. There's basketball, there's the climbing wall, there's in the afternoon, we pretty much always have a scheduled activity every day about 2:30. A lot of the rest of the time, it's, you know, kids can kind of do whatever they want to do. And they don't have to participate in the scheduled activity, but we always have something going on.
I bet most of them choose to.
Yeah, we do a lot of art stuff. They made green slime the other day, you know, so it's like just fun kid stuff. So just we're open from 11 to 6, and at 6 o'clock we change to teens only. So at 6 p.m. we have a curfew, so it's 14 and up until 6, and then we're open until 9.
Really?
And Fridays and Saturdays we're open until 10. Saturdays our hours are 3 to 10.
I had no idea you guys had evening hours.
Yes, we do.
What a great thing.
Yeah, it's nice for the teens to have a safe place to be in the evening sometimes.
Absolutely.
Especially, you know, if you're not really quite sure what to do, you can come and play pool and play basketball and hang out. There's a lot of kids meet up there, and it's a great fun place. And it's also, I think, nice for the teens to be there in the evening sometimes without the little kids, because you know, they all do great together, but sometimes at night it's nice to have the separation. So, yeah.
All right. Well, all you parents out there listening, think about it. Zach Gordon Youth Center, summer camp, or just
hang out,
drop in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. Anything else you'd like to share?
No, I think that's the main stuff. Come see us this summer, and you know, we're always got things going on.
Great. All right. Well, let's play a summery feeling song for your outro, Jordan. Thanks for being here today.
Thanks, Shelley.
What was going on? imagination aflame. Set the imagination aflame. For one second I felt like a kid on Christmas Day. The feeling stops all it said in the word. I will explain it by me. Like a bird, what's the best feeling in the world? I felt so good that night, and my soul just seemed to fly around that night. As I flew that night, for one second I felt like a bird.
This rollicking song belongs to a black-headed grosbeak. Like most birds, the male grosbeak begins singing in earnest a few days after reaching his traditional nesting grounds in spring. And like most birds, he sings frequently when trying to attract a mate. He'll sing a bit less while he and his mate incubate eggs, but pick up the pace again after the young hatch. By late summer, his singing will cease. Ever wonder how much a bird sings in one day? Some patient observers have shown that a typical songbird belts out its song between 1,000 and 2,500 times per day. Even though most bird songs last only a few seconds, that's a lot of warbling. On nights with a full moon, male sage thrashers have been known to proclaim their long-winded songs all night. But the North American record holder may well be the red-eyed vireo. One such vireo delivered its short song over 22,000 times in 10 hours. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein. Today's show is brought to you by White Flower Farm, a family-owned mail-order nursery offering a wide range of perennials, annuals, and shrubs for early summer planting. More information is at whiteflowerfarm.com.
This is a Juno afternoon. It's about 14 minutes to the top of the hour. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and here with me are my next guests, Keith McPinkow and Jennifer Klein. No relation to Andy. They'll be talking with us about Southeast Alaska lighthouses and specifically Five Finger Islands Light. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So for listeners who may not know, let's start off with, what did you guys want to start with? A little bit about Southeast lighthouses or...
We can do a little bit of a history of them,
yeah,
and the fact that we're a nonprofit.
Okay. Tell us about that.
Well, it was 20 years ago exactly that we saw an article in the paper about the Coast Guard requesting requests for proposals on running a lighthouse and maintaining it. And so different groups put in proposals. So some of the Southeast Alaska lighthouses are Point Retreat, Sentinel Island, Eldred Rock, Five Finger, which is between Petersburg and Juneau, Cape Decision, which is on the outside coast, and then further north, Cape St. Elias. And so various groups wrote proposals. They were reviewed by the Coast Guard, and we ended up with Five Finger Lighthouse, the Juneau Lighthouse Association.
The best lighthouse.
Oh, I say that, but Keith is on two boards more of lighthouses. So
they all have their uniqueness that makes them really awesome.
Yeah.
And what is unique about Five Finger Islands Light?
Well, it was the first one commissioned in 1902, and it was the last one manned. So it's described as the first and the last lighthouse.
I see.
And what we like to say, it's a new chapter in maritime history because we're a presence down there, and the Marine Exchange of Alaska has a tracking system, so it's all new technology as far as safety in the marine waters around here.
And it's a very beautiful building.
It's a gorgeous Art Deco design. It's really incredible.
Yeah, I've never seen a lighthouse that looked like that. How did it get its name?
If the islands, the Five Finger Islands, which are called, the first time I ever saw it was from the air. But they definitely look like knuckles of a hand. And so I think a perception back then, as far as being on the water and still perceiving knuckles, you know. And one of the books called Northern Lights says that it was like an angry hand reaching up to grab mariners as they pass.
That's
so
scary.
It was a pretty traveled route, you know, through the canneries and the fox farms and all that, that used to be actually more inhabited down there, you know, up until the 30s. So,
can you go and visit the lighthouse? I imagine you can. Are there tours?
We don't operate tours. People out of Petersburg do because it's a little bit closer. You can go down there. What we thought we were going to do is a bed and breakfast, quite frankly. But then the economy changed, fuel prices went up, and it's really quite expensive to get down there, and there's no dock. So we built this beautiful ramp with funds from Rasmussen Foundation, and an iceberg took it out.
Oh.
So we have half a ramp. So, you know,
those pesky icebergs.
You can helicopter down there, but that's also pricey. But once you're there, it's the most magical, magical place to be. It's surrounded by humpback whales because it's a feeding ground. Because the currents of Stevens Passage and Frederick Sound converge right there. So there's constant, in fact, that's why we partner with the Alaska Whale Foundation, because it's a great observation point for them. So,
how interesting.
Yeah.
All right, so I understand there will be a fundraiser to benefit Five Finger Lighthouse. It's a wine tasting as well. Would you like to tell us some details about that?
I'll let Keith talk a little.
All right, Keith, you're up.
Sure. So this Friday, and the lighthouses traditionally have had fundraisers such as this.
Benefits go towards their upkeep?
They do.
Okay.
The predominant work that goes down there is through volunteers, and we get our funds through a variety of ways, through grant writing, from other from foundations and from federal grants. And also we receive monies, local monies, through these fundraisers. So it's a fun little event we're putting on. It's been a few years since we've had a wine tasting.
Right. We used to do them pretty regularly. Specialty Imports has always been very good to us. So they'll be, you know, taking care of the wine. We're going to have some great food to share with everyone when they come. And then we have some fantastic silent auction baskets. People in Juneau, the businesses are pretty generous. So we have whale watching, Taku River Lodge, you know, trips, coastal helicopters, a trip, Allen Marine Whale Watch. I mean, I can go on and on and on about how generous people are. But they're always fun. We always have fun putting together and decorating them. Oh, doggy grooming.
Ooh.
And a boat haul out. Yeah.
A little bit for everybody in there.
Yeah. Sounds like it. Even the dogs. Everybody and their dog.
Well, Juneau loves their dogs.
No doubt about that. And so when and where is the fundraiser?
So the fundraiser is this Friday afternoon from 5:30 until 8, and it's at the Prospector Hotel in the Douglas Room. And I believe when you walk into the lobby, you go to the right, and it's separate from the T.K. McGuire's bar restaurant.
Oh, okay.
It's own little space back in there.
I'm glad you mentioned that. I probably would have gone to the restaurant. And that's right next door to the station.
It's
so. Real.
So we passed it on the way here.
Yeah. Well, everybody at K2 should be there then.
Yes. Yes. Everybody at K2 should be there.
All right. And so, well, what else can you tell us? Is there anywhere we can go to learn more about it, about the fundraiser, about lighthouses?
We do have a website. We have a Facebook page. And then we also have our own lighthouse page. It's FIVE 5 Finger Lighthouse.
AllOneWord.com. Yeah. Yeah, we had an older site, and so with this, our new book, we've sort of going through reorganization, which is very exciting because change is good, you know.
Yes.
And I was like the president for 15 years, and I said, no, we need young blood, you know, mm-hmm. new ideas, and so we've been able to do that. We have Paul Sharp, who's a filmmaker, and then Fred Sharp, his brother, who is a well-renowned well researcher. We have my sister-in-law, who's been coming up for years, and then my husband, Ed McIntosh, then myself, and Mish Fournet, another lighthouse enthusiast slash whale researcher. So we put together a new website, transferring some of the information from the old one. They're very good with social media, so, you know, blogs, Twitter, you know, all that, Facebook. Really pushing it, you know, and reaching out to another generation of folks, you know, to get interested in the place. So. Mm-hmm.
Jennifer's one of the original guard members of the beginning of the nonprofits taking over the lighthouses.
Really?
And it's awesome to have her knowledge and experience in guiding these through the years.
Oh, yes, I would imagine so.
We're sort of transitioning into younger and new people that are coming aboard as well.
Well, thank you for doing what you do.
It's a nice hobby.
Anything else we need to know about the event or the lighthouse?
No, it's just fun. And folks, if you haven't participated in one of these events, come on out. I'm sure Jennifer and myself would like to say hi.
It sounds like a wonderful time.
It's fun times.
Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
No, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Shelly.
Mm-hmm.
Billion burning suns calmly do as they did before, like me and you, sitting in their place, bound but years apart, stubborn as we are, matters of the heart. Still we've found a common ground.
Thank you for tuning in today. Our guests were representatives from the Cancer Connection and Let Every Woman Know Alaska, Tish, Joni, and Cheryl. And Joni is also a singer in the band No Evidence of Disease. They're performing tomorrow night. We had Rebecca Sosa here to talk about STEM summer camps going on this month. And Jordan Nigro was here giving us the monthly update on the Zach Gordon Youth Center. And we just heard from Keith McPinkow and Jennifer Klein. They were talking to us about the Five Finger Islands Light fundraiser going on this Friday. On today's show, we featured music by No Evidence of Disease as a teaser for their upcoming concert. We also heard from Keller Williams and David Crosby and Future Islands. It's playing right now in the background. On tomorrow's show, on the UAS Corner, Deb Reidman from Career Services will be here to talk about what her office does for students. Troy Quinn will offer a preview of this weekend's Juno Symphony concert. Find out about Friday's public media Rock Around the Block party and much more. It's tomorrow at 3 on a Juno afternoon. Jeff Brown is the producer. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. Have a great Juno evening.